In recent years, humanitarian responses have been complicated by compounding crises, such as climate change, epidemics and pandemics, and complex conflicts. In an ever-changing humanitarian and development space, we ask, what does the security and safety of aid workers look like? And what might it look like in the future? I'm Tara Arthur from the Global Interagency Security Forum. In each episode, I'll be speaking to guests about topics such as the localization of aid, the ups and downs of community acceptance, and the role of security in a digital world. Join me as we unpack the evolutions of NGO security risk management. Well, hello, Mila. It is good to see you today. Thanks for joining us.
Hey, Tara. I'm so happy to be here, and I'm really honored that I was asked to join this podcast and to speak on this topic. Thank you.
Oh, well, we're very excited to dive into today's conversation, but maybe we can just start with a little bit about yourself, you know, maybe a little bit about how you got into the sector and some of the roles that you've had that brought you to where you are today.
Sure. Yes, that sounds good. So my name is Mila Shutova, and I'm currently the security advisor with ChristianAid, supporting their Ukraine program team and the Ukraine humanitarian efforts. Originally, I do come from a history background, more specifically the history of the rise of nationalism in Europe, the Cold War history, the Soviet Union history. This eventually evolved into studying civil societies, NGOs in both Ukraine and Russia, and also broader international development issues. In my entire professional career, believe it or not, I have been trying to move away from Eastern Europe. This just seemed like a natural area of expertise for me, and I did want to broaden my understanding of other geographies. And I did explore Central Asia and Middle East and African countries. So for a few years, I have been working with global NGOs on crisis management and security risk management in various contexts. And last year, things have changed. As we all know, I found myself being pulled back and frankly unable to stay away from the current crisis. I have been supporting humanitarian efforts in the capacity in which I can and using the languages. And in terms of what it means to me with the whole security risk management and specifically Ukraine and supporting the humanitarian efforts, humanitarian organizations, I often remember my late grandfather, if I may share that briefly. So he used to tell me, and he, by the way, he was afraid of nothing, but he was always telling me that, Mila, having no fears is actually not wise, but you have to know what to fear and then act accordingly, right? So I find this is the shortest summary of security risk management, basically. And with that, like most other security professionals, I do try to do my best to equip those who help others to understand and to master the tools to remain safe, as safe as possible in various contexts.
That's very interesting experience. Thank you for sharing that. And what wonderful wisdom from your family passed on to you. That's wonderful to hear how that carries forward in the work that you do to today. And speaking of, and since you've mentioned some of the current context that you are operating and working on, why don't we go there a little bit? Let's talk about Ukraine in particular and kind of the current trends that you're seeing, the current challenges. And maybe even before we go down that road too far, let's take a look at what you feel as some of the critical historical context to understand and maybe help us understand what the challenges facing security risk management in Ukraine.
Yes, so this context is not different in the sense that it is unique, because every context is unique in its own way. This particular context hasn't experienced this level of violence or insecurity or armed conflict in the past 80 years. So it's really important to understand how the organizations that go in and work there and try to help the people, what they must pay attention to and how they can understand where the people are coming from. Because understanding a history of a context is always important, having some awareness of it. You must understand where what people's views are, where they come from. It's all part of the acceptance strategy, humanitarian world. In terms of the history of Ukraine and the region specifically, so for many years, Soviet Union, when it was Soviet Union, it did remain a bit of a mystery to the rest of the world. And the Cold War ensured that there was very limited information shared. It was highly controlled, and people did receive very specific view of each other's lives and realities. And so after the fall of the Soviet Union and for the past 30 years of independence of the former republics, including Ukraine, there has been a massive transformation happening in all of these countries, each country following its own path. Again, depending on its past and current trends. And so from my experience in the region, what I have seen over the past 30 years, 20 years, 10 years, really people's political views have been based on their economic situation or on their personal well-being. So they would always look at their situation. Do we have electricity? Do we have heat? Do we have water? Do we have adequate medical care, schools? You know, how do we deal with corruption issues? And corruption has been a big issue in all of these contexts. So really, those informed the political views and not the other way around. Ideology was very much further on the list of consideration for people. So this also understanding that helps to understand people's mentality today and also their resourcefulness, how they look at life, how they look at different events. And it's important to understand this context by having this knowledge of what they've experienced before.
That's very interesting. And, you know, how do you find that this is helping you with the work that you are tasked with right now? How do you feel that this historical knowledge is really kind of giving you some of the information to help you be responsive to the current situation?
So I do feel that in this context, I have an awareness of various perspectives, and I understand the actors and communities' behaviors and why they do the things they do. And for any security manager, security professional, you really have to understand not only your relationships with communities, but also how they interact with each other, because that can save you or harm you whenever you're operating and analyzing the risks and the security risks. So really understanding that bigger picture and then the linkages between within the context, but also larger linkages. So diving into this example of Ukraine, and first, actually zooming out onto the global level, even though every country in the world has their own center of influence, and we are not Eurocentric in the world as much as Europe might want to think that, but there are many interests, national interests, and influences. However, this particular conflict does have a very wide economic and political and consequently security impact on other countries in the world. For example, I'm always looking at different perspectives and different parts and viewpoints in African countries. For example, the private military groups' influence or economic political influences, anti-Russian, anti-American sentiments, all that plays a role. In the Middle East also, there's Israel, Syria, Saudi Arabia, what their role and support of the conflict, of which side, and how it affects their own populations and their own internal politics. In South America, the countries are divided, but not necessarily from the European perspective divided, for their own reasons and for their own historical reasons or economic reasons, whatever it may be. In Asia as well, the big actors, and there's South Korea, China, Iran, India, but then there are also the Central Asian countries that are undergoing huge transformation. Societies are affected by what's happening in Ukraine and Russia right now as well. And they're watching, of course, to inform their own actions and societies and security. So down from the global level to European level, there is obviously the economic impact. There is migration crisis, 8 million refugees from Ukraine in Europe right now. It's cultural and social shift. And all these challenges also affect local security. In terms of the Ukraine and frankly, Russia level, also there is the psychosocial impact, the major setbacks economically in terms of unemployment, protection, and also all the effects of war and dynamics between people, even within the same households. It's something that we think that, well, if somebody's on one side or on the other side, that automatically determines where they come from or what they are, that determines their profile. But that's also not the case.
So tell me more about that. Can you unpack that part a little bit more?
So I guess in terms of humanitarian work, and this is something that I find many professionals and organizations, humanitarian organizations, struggle with in the context of this conflict, it's not as easy to separate politics and people. And this I still find crucial because it's important to have a position. It's important to have opinions. And it's very difficult to stay neutral personally when atrocities happen and human tragedy and suffering. So when we are doing humanitarian work, that's what we should focus on. We're focusing on the people and on the need and on saving lives, protecting people. And really, it's important not to get sidetracked by the politics and understand that there can be victims on all sides. It's not just that, if the people are on this side of the border or on this side of town, they're good or these are bad, you know? So it's really tricky. And I find that the humanitarian concept or principle of neutrality and impartiality, they are still very important, but they're becoming difficult for organizations to deal with in this sense, in this context. And sometimes there is this urge to simplify things, you know, and to see things through one lens and one lens only.
I was thinking about what you were saying, and in terms of where people are getting their information and in terms of this concept around neutrality, how are you navigating that in terms of how you capture the information you need to best serve the work that you're doing? So are you finding it challenging, or do you find it, there are opportunities for you to really kind of navigate managing good sources for your information around this particular conflict?
Yeah, so this is very important. Information in general is key to many things. In a conflict setting, it's particularly important and sensitive, and there is no such thing as neutral information unless it's something like today is a Thursday. That's it. You cannot argue with that. And you don't think that's propaganda. But most information does serve a purpose in a conflict context. And the danger also that appears with compromising neutrality is when people try to pick out bits and pieces of information without having a full understanding, full bigger picture understanding, and really simplifying, as I mentioned, simplifying the concepts. And so, for example, language is important. And in this conflict, in this environment, I do find that my linguistic abilities do really help me. And I do see the differences. Even if things are translated, they lose certain meaning and they lose certain connotation and certain sense. So to continue with the example of language, sometimes local language used, whether it's Ukrainian or Russian, it's important, but not in the way that many may assume. And that goes back to a historical point as well. Ukraine is a very interesting example, and people there, they really choose what behavior change they will adopt. And they choose what matters to them and what doesn't matter to them, and what signifies their support or their anger and what doesn't. So, and it is based on personal factors. And it's also important to understand and sometimes not seeing things as black and white. If, you know, this language is bad, this language is good. Well, again, within the context, there are differences. And in terms of the information neutrality or lack of information neutrality, that also goes back to the point of people's mentality and history. Because in this context, in this area, in this geography, people may be used to misinformation, disinformation, propaganda, and often they can tell the difference. So you can ask them, can also build these relationships as part of your acceptance strategy, but you can also use them as a resource. I personally, I value the local perspective very much. And sometimes I don't necessarily agree with it, but it's very important to know it and to understand why people say things that that they say or try to impose certain points of view.
Tell me more real quick about what you were saying in terms of their being able to discern the difference between the propaganda. How have you seen that play out for you? And how does that link to the work around acceptance that you've seen as well?
It's interesting because I guess there are certain behaviors that people are used to that they don't even think about in detail. So coming from an external background of coming from another environment, we see things very distinctly. And sometimes for us, well, this is obviously propaganda and we want to point it out and we want to shout out and let everybody know that this is propaganda. But it's the people who are the audience of this propaganda, for them, it's not, yes, they understand it's propaganda, but it's not something that they think is a big deal because they're used to certain channels, certain information channels, and where they get their information from or just what's available. They know that it's something that, well, can be taken with a grain of salt or their obvious interests that they just understand. And they don't necessarily base their own opinions or at least something that they voice inside their home or in their kitchen with their families. So there is really double standards, I guess, or not double standards, double reality almost, that people don't make such a big deal of misinformation, disinformation, but it doesn't mean that they don't understand or don't know it.
That's very interesting. I guess I'd take you a little more down this road around information and maybe go back to the earlier question a little bit through this lens in terms of how you're navigating the lack of neutral information or the presumed lack of neutral information, perhaps. And maybe you can speak a little bit to that and, you know, how you are managing kind of the source of information from both sides of this conflict and perhaps other conflicts, if you wish as well.
Yes, definitely. So in terms of managing and navigating, it really helps to know a couple of languages. So there are different points that I can pick out and I can explain to my team, to other humanitarian actors that are not necessarily obvious. To be clear, I do not have access to military intelligence information. I'm not a military expert or political expert for that matter. But I do really go through dozens of reports, commentaries, analyses, whatever is available, different perspectives. And I focus on that which is relevant to my work as security manager and to humanitarian work. So I try to really strip it off all the color and see the facts. And then understanding the background and having applying my security mindset and knowledge, then I package these facts to explain and to equip the team with so they can operate in this environment, having enough and valid information, but factual without necessarily something that is not either accurate or really needs a lot more context. And so it is difficult to get this reliable and quality information right now. And it is seemingly everywhere, but at the same time, you just always have to remind yourself to question who is it serving, what is it serving, and use logic and use really healthy skepticism and question everything, you know, but staying focused on the people and not on the politics.
Thank you for that. Interesting insights. I would ask you then, you know, the influx of information, it sounds like you have to comb through. What does that really mean for you in terms of having to look for security managers? And do you have any advice maybe or tips or suggestions for those who may not have the multiple language opportunity to engage and shift through some of this, you know, influx of information that might be coming out and how to best discern it?
Sure. Yes. It's an interesting question because I actually thought whether there is this overload of information or maybe it is overload of information sources, but the information, the amount of information is, the kind of information is repeating itself. So is it really something new that we see, or do 100 reports repeat the same thing in just 100 different languages? Well, sometimes, yes. So it's really understanding that right now everybody's posting everything. And something that I found interesting is actually in this particular context in Ukraine, a valuable source of information for me has been local social media channels. And this is almost not embarrassing, but it's something that shouldn't be like that. It's almost backwards, because we stay away from social media. We understand that anybody can post there. But knowing which channels, how they act or what they do after some time, you really understand that they do provide facts sometimes prior to the official announcements. And I do find out some information that is useful to me before it is available in any type of reports. So this is, of course, you have to be very careful with social media and what's available, and not build your SOPs or risk analyses based on social media. That's crazy. But you have to take it into account and really not disregard it and use it. And in terms of some of the other things with obtaining this information or sifting through it, I find that these days, you know, these AI tools and services, they're in high demand, specifically for the purpose of analyzing through hundreds of sources simultaneously and providing you with clear report very quickly, because time is an issue and all the humanitarian response is immediate. You know, that there is that demand, and for security managers, it is really difficult to absorb that much more information, which not necessarily in the end is very useful to the operations, and can be a lot of just, you know, philosophizing or political arguments. So in that sense, it's important to know which services you can use, and that will summarize the basic facts for you. And that from that, you can then build up your own analysis and package it for your teams and for the programs. But one thing with information that I did find and with the report that are good, many of them coming out, and that they are available through webinars, through briefings, through all kinds of channels, but I find that they must be credible and their reputation is very important. And what I mean by that is that sometimes I notice reports, they provide the facts, but they also pass judgment on the facts. And even if I agree with that judgment, even if there's nothing wrong with that, it automatically makes them lose some level of credibility, because they stop being neutral and impartial. Again, it may be something that you agree with, but for the purpose of security advice and humanitarian support, is it very helpful or is it a good thing?
Well, let me ask you more about that, because I think, you know, as we approach kind of this anniversary period of the specific conflict around Ukraine, talk to me about that essence and maybe just some of the broader security risk management considerations. Are there specific lessons that you are seeing that we can learn from? Have you seen this, some lessons be applicable beyond?
It's crazy to think, first of all, that we are approaching 1 year mark. It's the professional part of me and the security managers who are dealing with this context. They have come to terms with it, but on a personal level, it's still remarkable and many people are still in shock. So in terms of the lessons that we are learning, and I would say based on the information dynamics, it can come from unexpected sources, and good information can come from unexpected sources. Another interesting fact that I have been observing, and many people can observe over the past year, that history, which I always took very seriously, it gets rewritten, and it gets rewritten by many sides. And it's almost like storytelling in some respects. However, I'm still arguing very much so that it is still worth looking at and it's still worth exploring. Also, in terms of, this is not a new lesson, but this context is just emphasizing this for all the security environments, contexts, and work, the evolution of the security professional role and the profile. Because right now, you're not just a technical expert, you're an analyst, you're an advisor, you're a field operative, you're a negotiator, sometimes you're an interpreter, sometimes you're supporting in some other ways on the ground or remotely. And really, the profile is growing. And right now, the security professionals are in demand in various contexts, and the crises are just multiplying. There's a huge need, and it's not new, but it's always evolving. There is constant evolution. In terms of also the concept of neutrality, something that I found interesting and not necessarily comfortable for many people or organizations, because initially, humanitarian work, as I said, it should be neutral and should be impartial. However, with this conflict, and it's not just because of my personal connection, but many find it almost impossible to remain neutral. So is this something that we should discuss, perhaps? Is this something to be addressed in the future? Does it help us or does it harm us in evolution of security risk management? So this is something that I'm thinking how things are changing based on this and more widely.
That is an excellent question. It's interesting because you can definitely apply that question to other contexts, I believe. And I think you're right that it's very illuminating in what you're sharing. And I'm just thinking about what you noted as a personal connection. And what does that really mean for you as a security professional, having that personal connection and recognizing when you say, you know, the crises continue to unfold? And how do you feel about that? And what are you, you know, what are you best staying grounded in, perhaps, around these issues?
It's a difficult one because it's not something that I have figured out completely how to deal with this. On one side, I think that my personal connection to the context of Ukraine and to the context of the current conflict on various levels and various sides, it's benefiting me in my work as security manager. It does give me more insights into the field work and into the higher level concepts. However, it also brings on a lot more stress, and it's almost becoming personal in some ways, which I just basically have to leave that at the door every time I put on my security manager hat and just support my team and support the people in the best way that I can. So in that sense, really, the self-care that security managers are really bad at becomes that much more important. So it's something that it's work in progress. I find that people who are tied to certain contexts personally may be better experts. However, they're also more susceptible and can be more vulnerable after some time. So that's a personal reflection.
Well, thank you for sharing that. And definitely we acknowledge that hopefully that can improve for not just you, but for all who might need it to be. And if we can do anything as well. I was just thinking about a comment you made and how organizations view security and the relationship you might have with others in the organization to help you best do the work that you're being asked to do. So maybe you can talk a little bit about how your reflections, and you can use the Ukraine context or elsewhere if you choose, but how are you feeling about the resource allocation for security in order to best do what you need to do, particularly in these complex environments like a Ukraine?
There are actually two answers to this question, and they
like
do.
That.
And well, there are many more probably, but I can think of two off the top of my head. But they do depend on the context. And in terms of Ukraine, I feel this has become much easier for security to participate in the program function and to be a part of the conversation or consideration when it comes to resource allocation, and a significant part. Personally, I consider myself very lucky. I'm working with a team that listens to me, is very open and appreciative of my guidance, my advice. Sometimes I do need to nudge them and insert myself a little bit earlier in the conversation, but that's not because anybody's trying to exclude security. It's just a matter of me explaining the value that security can add. right? And what helped me in the beginning working with this team, one team member basically told me, well, you know, back to the information, there is so much of it, it's everywhere. We can sign up for more, we can get even more. But what does it all mean? So this really, to me, that set me up for success in a way that this is my role, using my knowledge, my security mindset, to scan, to pick out, to package, and to deliver the things that are important from the safety and security perspective to the team. And I do try to stay as aware and as up to date on all their objectives and plans and understand their priorities from the start, so security can also align and be considered as early as possible. And of course, in previous experiences and with other contexts where security does need to kind of make its way to the front row or maybe the 10th row or somewhere a little bit closer to the decision making, it's also it's mutual education and mutual learning, right? It's showing the value. For example, what I do, some of the support I give to the team is informal messaging using various channels, then more formal briefings with the team, then sit reps and different reports that I include senior management on, and really focusing on comprehensive risk assessments that I try to do together with the team and try to get them to brainstorm the risk so they practice this security mindset, but also show me where the gaps are. And I think on both sides, not just operations or program side, but also on the security function side, to continue this work together. And unfortunately, as I said, it is dependent on the context and on the specific crisis. Ukraine just happens to be at the center of many organizations, partially because it's new, partially because it's a new humanitarian environment. And organizations are not necessarily equipped. They do not have the capacity to understand all the security risks. They have excellent programmatic expertise, but not necessarily security expertise in this context.
Well, let's go there a little bit in terms of the wider sectors. So do you think that there are things that the wider sector were prepared for to respond to the Ukraine situation, or were there things still to learn, or things that we're still learning from Ukraine? And maybe another piece to the question is, do you feel that we're, you know, being more proactive in the Ukraine response? So just kind of getting your thoughts there and how we're doing. How is the sector doing? What can we do?
It's a good question to ask 1 year into the crisis to sort of assess things. I think originally it was a shock for everybody, and the humanitarian crisis in Europe in this new environment and at such scale was something that was new. In terms of the risk in Ukraine, nuclear threat was something that not many organizations were equipped to deal with or to understand fully, and still are not. However, in terms of other security risks for an armed conflict for environment, they're not radically new in Ukraine. So we continue understanding how we can apply the lessons or the experience from other locations, other geographies, and use that in Ukraine. And that's, I think, it's a huge advantage. And many of my colleagues who are much more knowledgeable in this sense, they don't have issues with assessing the armed conflict security risks and preparing their teams and organizations. I think also something that Ukrainian context, Ukrainian example reminds us, but is applicable to the wider humanitarian sector, is that the specifics of refugee crisis. So in terms of what is a refugee, and really must remember that refugee or internally displaced person, it's only just one aspect of a person's circumstance, and it doesn't form their whole profile. Everybody is different. And right now, 8 million refugees that are now in Europe and others elsewhere in the world, everybody's story is different, everybody's circumstances, situation, and this really, we should understand that they may not need the support that we are providing to the refugees as a whole, whatever that is. You know, it's really unique to different people. And also in terms of maximizing the humanitarian efforts safely, something that humanitarian security sector is used to running in and helping right away, fixing the problem, providing a solution and making everybody as safe as possible or ensuring that everybody follows the instructions. However, in certain contexts, that's not necessarily the best approach sometimes, unless it's a life and death emergency and that there is something where you just have to run, go to the shelter. In other instances, it might be better to take a step back and to assess and to really not rush into doing things. And back to the Ukraine example, if people right now with the power outages, if they only have 2 hours of electricity a day during which they must wash, cook, see their friends, family, charge everything, hopefully there's not another air raid alert happening at the same time in those 2 hours, maybe it's not the best time to push them to do a meeting or to decide what kind of support they want because they just have so many other things. And it's not the people just on the ground or the local responders. It's also our staff and ourselves that just because we want to help right now doesn't mean it's always the best way of doing things.
That is very well said and a really good token for us to take with us. And to that point, it would be great if you want to maybe share with us some things that you've would find really impactful in this moment that you think would be beneficial to others working in the sector right now, maybe other security managers or other humanitarians trying to operate in Ukraine or other crises around the world. What are some things that you think are really important to keep in mind right now, today?
I reflect on this a lot, and for myself, for others, for the future. And I think ultimately, we all want to know what will happen tomorrow. What will happen? Who will win? When the people be okay? When will they be able to return home? When can we get some sleep or any of those things? And these things for insecurity risk management world, they're important to be prepared, to be able to respond and to evolve. However, we must also understand that being reactive and doing things right now is not always always smart. And we also have to understand that this is long-term. And the questions that I reflect on personally are, for example, when will the peace come? What will it be like? You know, what kind of peace will it be? Will it be peace in the sense that we think or something else? And what the post-conflict environment will be like in any conflicts, really, in any crises? Yes, you're dealing with a crisis now, but you also have to understand that the need will be there after the crisis is over. And the need for the service, for this help, for resources will remain. So we are going through something, through this hot phase of a crisis. We're right in the middle of it. In hindsight, things will become clearer. Sometimes we have to be okay with uncertainty today, and we have to do the best we can, but just not try to answer everything right now and help the people that we can help right now. But given that this is a long term, still taking care of ourselves, that becomes the utmost priority that every day we should remind ourselves to do.
Well, Mila, I think that is such an important point that hopefully we'll all very much take forward. And you're absolutely right. Taking care of yourself is a really important part of being able to do your best. And we do hope that anyone who is listening, who may be looking for resources or things like that, are able to find some. We'll list some and the notes from today's episode as well. But we encourage you to seek any support that is provided to you. And we just appreciate you, Mila, so much for taking time to speak with us today. We're looking forward to staying in touch with you and hopefully seeing you again in the near future. But just leave you with any last words that you want to share. Otherwise, we look forward to seeing you again soon.
I do want to share that I'm a huge fan of GISF, and I'm so grateful to you guys and for the work you do. You've been instrumental in my path personally, but also in general, the community of best practice, security practice. So please continue. please do what you're doing, and it's very much appreciated. Thank you. Thank you so much, guys.
Oh, thanks very much for that. We really appreciate that, Mila.
Thank you.
Thanks for being here with us today.
The Global Interagency Security Forum is a member-led NGO with a global network of over 140 member organizations and affiliates. We are committed to achieving sustainable access for populations in need through improved safety and security for aid workers and operations. GISF's original research, collaboration, and events drive positive change in security risk management across the humanitarian and development sector. We operate according to humanitarian principles and lead on best practices and innovation by pushing for a collaborative and inclusive approach to security risk management.